The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So you might want to stay with your eyes closed, you can take in. So this poem is called For Freedom. As a bird soars high in the free holding of the wind, clear of the uncertainty of ground, opening the imagination of wings into the grace of emptiness, to fulfill new voyages, may your life awaken to the call of its freedom. As the embrace of the earth welcomes all who call death, all we call death, taking deep into itself the right solitude of a seed, allowing it time to shed the grip of its former form and give way to a deeper generosity that will one day send it forth, a tree into springtime. May all that holds you fall from its hungry ledge into the pregnant surge of your heart. As a bird soars high in the free holding of the wind, clear of the certainty of ground, opening the imagination of wings into the grace of emptiness, to fulfill new voyagings, may your life awaken to the call of its freedom. So this afternoon, I visited with a man who is dying, and as we were talking, we had a beautiful talk, and this man is quite peaceful and clearly looking his death right in the eye, and he spread, and we were talking, and at one point he spread his arms open, kind of like the wings of a bird, opening the imagination of wings into the grace of emptiness. He kind of opened his arms, like, you know, like spread them wide. And I don't remember what he said exactly, but he was talking about his kind of opening up to this death that was coming. And there was this beautiful, gracious kind of, and this way the hands kind of opened, it created this empty space in front of him. And his kind of openness and stepping forward or receiving was quite a beautiful thing to sit with. We have this expression in English sometimes, you know, of, like, you know, different versions of it, but like stopping in your tracks. But, you know, pausing in mid-sentence. But, you know, stopping in the middle of a thought. And sometimes we encounter situations where we stop. Our thinking stops. We stop mid-thought. In the middle of our tracks, kind of. And what's it like? What does it take for you to come to the place where your thoughts stop? But it isn't just because you're afraid, or it isn't that you're somehow blank, but it's more like your thoughts stop And it's like you're opening up your wings into the empty grace of space. Kind of like willingly, openingly, kind of like, ah. And certainly there are times that some people experience when they enter into certain occasions when past and future kind of are not that relevant, as it was when you sit with someone who's dying, and or can be. And that seemed very pregnant, the moment there of sitting, being with him, talking with him. And it didn't, you know, the past and future didn't matter. You know, just here. You know, I had a busy day doing lots of things with people and meeting with people, and I stepped into this really peaceful room. When I stepped into his room, I wasn't sure if he was meditating or sleeping in a kind of hospital bed. And so I said quietly something like, you know, are you sleeping? Or, and he opened his eyes right there, so it was clearly he wasn't sleeping. He said, no, come in. And I remember once, that little visit this today reminded me of some years ago. I was on a sunny day, warm day, nice day, blue skies, sitting in the backyard of someone who was a gardener, and lots of vegetables and plants and, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit lush with wonderful plants, sitting on the porch looking out. And visiting this woman to talk to her about the plans or the plan, the design of the memorial service for her son who had died, young son. Kind of, you know, certainly it was a time that's kind of things, kind of the moment stopped. There wasn't a past and a future. There wasn't many thoughts. It was kind of like my wings opened wide and things got very still. And it was kind of, you know, kind of powerful in the stillness of sitting there and looking at the plants and the garden and the blue sky, and clearly in the moment, a beautiful day. But, you know, her son had just died, and we just felt like you could hear, I don't know, they could say they could hear a pin drop, but you could hear a teardrop, maybe. You could, you know, just like everything was stopped, everything was clear. There was a clarity. There was quite something. So what does it take for you to have your thoughts stop mid-sentence, mid-thought? But to it, you know, to just in a very full way, pregnant way, to be here and open and present, and to kind of feel the aliveness of this moment as if this is it. Or this, whatever was happening now, so just now, that your wings open wide. Opening the imagination of wings into the grace of emptiness. As a bird soars high in the free holding of the wind, clear of the certainty of ground. Someone read this to me, this poem. I didn't know this poem. It's by John O'Donohue. Read it to me, to a group of us, after having breakfast together. That was kind of an, you know, you don't usually read poetry after breakfast. But when I heard those lines, I also had the same feeling as the line goes, of the, opening the imagination of wings, opening the wings into the grace of emptiness, this spreading of the wings and opening and stepping into this moment. I could feel myself with these lines being read, just kind of this lifting and freeing, and just kind of like I could feel my heart almost soar and in the space of the moment, the freedom of here and now. And it was kind of lovely to have a little poem for this. And so I asked for a copy of the poem. And then I thought about, when I was going to think about what to talk about here, I didn't really want to talk about anything. But I did want to, I mean, I very much wanted to sit here and be with you. But I wanted to somehow try to share or convey or something, this feeling that I had when I saw this poem and then later in the day met with this man who was dying. And then later in the day, still, a lake, fir trees around the lake, ducks floating around, a little bit of sand on the edge of the lake. And I just swam back and forth across the lake. The evening, sun was getting going down. It was quite lovely. For a while, there were other people swimming in the lake. But then there was just one person, and then on the other side of the lake, kind of. And it just, you know, is that a moment also where something stops? It's swimming there, my back and forth. What is it? What is it that is possible in the moment that doesn't require much, that doesn't need much from us or from the world, where thoughts stop, the heart opens, where we feel that just this moment is full, just this moment is enough. But this moment is enough because there are no thoughts to tell us stories that it should be different. No thoughts that say, tomorrow, uh-oh, tomorrow is dangerous. Or no thoughts to tell us stories about what happened yesterday. But this moment has no thoughts, or thoughts that don't fill the space. So to somehow try to convey, I guess is the best word, rather than speak, what was happening for me, what was intimate for me here. I kind of had these very different poems or quotes that kind of thought. And there's a wonderful thing that I received from an English monk named Ajahn Amaro. And he doesn't know the source, apparently, but it has to do with his teacher in Thailand, Ajahn Chah. And there was a visiting Zen student who came in Thailand to visit Ajahn Chah, famous Thai meditation teacher. And the fact that this was a Zen student has some bearing, I guess, because the way the exchange went. Because in Zen, you sometimes ask simple questions, kind of. But for Zen people, they don't ask innocent questions. It isn't like, you know, how's the weather? They might ask how's the weather, but they're asking something profound. Like, I had a Zen master in Japan who said, it was really hot weather. And he said to me, I don't remember it anymore, but he said something simple like, do you like the hot weather? What's the hot weather like for you? And I made it, oh, it's, I don't know what I said. I said, nice. It's nice. And he looked at me like intensely, like, and he said, that's 20% answer. I got graded. because Zen people don't ask simple questions like this is profound, and you just missed the boat. So the Zen student asked Ajahn Chah, "How old are you? Do you live here all year round?" So, you know, it's an innocent question. You know, how old are you? And do you live here at this monastery all the time? But, you know, Zen student, Zen person, you know, like you have to kind of like, Maybe. So this is what Ajahn Chah said as an answer. "I live nowhere. There is no place you can find me. I have no age. To age, you have to exist. And to think you exist is already a problem. Don't make problems. Then the world has none either. Don't make a self. There's nothing more to say." And probably he just sent him off. I got sent off by a Zen master in Japan. He pointed to the door. It was clearly time to leave. Because I went to pay respects to his teacher, who was quite elderly. And after he'd been paying respects, we sat and had tea together. And my Japanese was rudimentary, but we were talking in Japanese. And there was a translator, an American, who could translate with me. We were having tea, sitting there at the little table, talking, and the Zen master was talking a little bit, and he said, at some point he said, made a statement. And it was kind of a powerful statement. So I wanted to make sure I got it right. And he said, people cannot become enlightened. So I wanted to make sure I heard it right. So I thought I was repeating it back to him. And when I repeated it back, he said, he pointed to the door and said, "Come back 20 years before." And so the man I was with, who spoke more Japanese, he said, "Do you mean 20 years later?" And he said, "No, 20 years before." And it was clear we had to leave right then. It was like, he was like, "You go." Well, what had happened was that he said, people cannot be enlightened, but the word for people and carrots in Japanese is almost the same. So, you know, I was trying to repeat it, but what I came out of my mouth, not speaking much Japanese, was, "Are you saying carrots cannot be enlightened?" And so, out you go. So that was the different kind of thought stop. I got distracted. So what does it mean? What can it mean for you? How could you say this? How could you be? What reference point do you have of how to exist? Is any circumstance in your whole life where this kind of makes some sense, what Ajahn Chah says? Any state of being, or being at ease, walking on the beach, or waking up from a nap, or being with an intimate person in some kind of way that time stops, or being with someone when they're dying and everything falls away, and meditating, or what? Where it makes sense to say something like this. I live nowhere. There is no place you can find me. I have no age. To age, you have to exist. And to think you exist is already a problem. Don't make problems. Then the world has none either. Don't make itself. There's nothing more to say. What if that "there's nothing more to say" was the most loving thing said in the most loving voice? The most caring, like this is the most caring and important thing that anybody could look to you and say to you, "There's nothing more to say." What if their wings opened up, as they said it, or your wings opened up, the wings of your mind, thoughts stopped, and you just hear. Things become still or open or vast or infinite. Yes, it's true. Nothing more to say. To say just makes a mess of it, just breaks it up. And I thought about this. This is not a poem, but it almost could be. This is actually a very important little passage for people who are chaplains. It was written by a Christian minister who worked as a chaplain a bit, and it has some, I think, wonderful statement about how to be together with people. We are all healers. Kind of nice. We're all healers. We are all healers who can reach out to offer health. And we all are patients in constant need of help. And when we look at healing as creating space for the stranger, it is clear that we should be willing and able to offer this so much needed form of hospitality. Therefore, healing means, first of all, the creation of an empty but friendly space where those who suffer can tell their story to someone who can listen with real attention. Our most important question as healers is not what to say or do, but how to develop enough inner space where the story can be received. Healing is the humble, but also very demanding task of creating and offering a friendly, empty space where strangers can reflect on their pain and suffering without fear and find the confidence that makes them look for new ways right in the center of their confusion. We are all healers. And then the healing that this passage offers is the healing of hospitality, of offering an friendly, empty space to receive someone and hear them and receptivity. And this also works best, this creating a friendly, empty space. If something inside of us gets quiet or still, stops, the incessant thinking and comparing and worrying and wondering and ambition and desires and wishes and hopes in us, just like let be still, quiet. This wonderful meeting I had today with a man who's dying, it would not have been wonderful if I couldn't met him in the space that he was in. He was in this beautiful space of friendly emptiness. Clearly, he was very peaceful for him. He was kind of looking forward to dying. He was clearly dying. He stopped eating, and he was quite sick. He is quite sick. But it was a welcoming idea for him, the letting go into his space. For him, it was kind of like a coming home to what he'd been, one of the things that had been most important for him his whole life, his spirituality, his awakening, his clarity that he had. This was kind of like, it all was coming together. It was all, what he'd lived his whole life got concentrated. It wasn't like this was his purpose of his life, but it all kind of came to a head or came concentrated or became, reared itself up. There was nothing else anymore. There wasn't, you know, the car needed to have its oil change or honey, we're out of milk, you know, or it's like, it was just here. So he was in this wonderful space of, I like you know, connecting to something that was without thought and peaceful and empty. And to meet him and to connect with him, I had to be the same way, so we could share that. And that's partly why he wanted me there, is to share that and meet that. And this passage about we're all being healers and offering a friendly, empty space for the stranger. It's possible to have a very deep connection to a stranger in 2 minutes. And some of you maybe have had that. I mean, to give a dramatic example, if you're walking down the sidewalk and someone else is walking and there's no one else around, and the person suddenly falls and is dying, and you're the one there, or maybe not dying, but suddenly, you know, has some terrible condition, and you call the ambulance, they're coming, but they take a few minutes. It's just the two of you, and they look at you with appreciation and love, and everything's time, maybe your thoughts stop, just you. And it's like now, they're the most important person in the world. And the contact and the connection and looking and caring is maybe as deep as it would be for almost anyone that you've ever met, and, you know, that you've been close to for our lifetime. What are the circumstances in which you see a stranger and you allow yourself the possibility of seeing beyond the surface? When I was 19, that's when I first learned, I noticed in myself, I don't know when it started, but I noticed that I had the capacity to go and be in a place where there are lots of people and have most of my thoughts be commentary and judgments about the people I saw. I was kind of shocked. What am I doing? You know, and also that it made my mind tired to do it. When I started, really saw how much it does for. Why? And what separation and what waste of time to be judging people and commenting upon their hair or their clothes or their how they're walking or, you know, all kinds of things about them. Don't we have better things to do as people? Do we meet people? And we have an amazing capacity for caring for each other, for connecting to each other, to be present for each other, to be healers for each other, to be here, to be present for this person that's here, and for yourself. So another poem. This one is by Roger Keyes. It's called Hakusai Says. Hakusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention. Notice. He says, keep looking. Stay curious. He says, there is no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get to be more of who you really are. He says, get stuck. Accept it. Repeat yourself as long as it's interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees. Wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside of you. He says it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home or stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and grasses in your garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that if life lives through, it matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. Peace is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Look, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. Well, that was too good to be true that it stopped working, because I was going to say again, you know, what happens when thoughts stop? What happens when the words stop in your mind? So we sit, practice mindfulness. But it's helpful when we practice mindfulness for it not be another activity of more thinking and more planning and more expectations and more trying to attain something and get something and keeping the mind busy. To really settle into meditation is to kind of begin stepping into that place where thoughts stop, where the wings of our heart or our mind open and fly. So we're being carried on the wind of space, of goodness, of freedom, of love. Because we know how to get quiet for thoughts of the past, the thoughts of the future, self-preoccupation, so that we're ready to meet the stranger by creating an open, friendly space. Who knows when you're going to meet someone who needs you the most? Who knows when you're going to meet someone who's dying? Who knows when you meet someone whose young son just died? They don't need much from you. They don't have to be smart or figure out complicated things, say wonderful things. Sometimes what they need is presence and to be able to meet with someone who knows how to have their thoughts stop, their worry and their inner chatter and their fear and their trying to figure things out all stop. So we're just here with this. And so mindfulness is kind of willingness to step into dying in the best possible terms of that way over and over again, into that peace, into that letting go, into that freedom and space that this man that I saw today was clearly opening to and stepping into, and the kind of a fulfillment of a life rather than the end of a life. So I'll read one more poem. This is by the Buddha. Don't chase the past or long for the future. The past is left behind. The future is not yet reached. Right here, with what is, have insight into whatever phenomena that has arisen, not faltering and not agitated, by knowing it one develops the mind. Ardently do what should be done today. Who knows? Death may come tomorrow. There's no bargaining with mortality. Whoever dwells ardent, active day and night, is, says the peaceful sage, one who has an auspicious day. So here, so this emphasis on really being present here is a powerful thing to do. And I don't know if I said this yet today, but so that, you know, I had all these wonderful events today in the course of the day. And a lot of it had to do with how these different events, situations open the heart, open the situation. And there was just a lot of love that was possible. Love with the person who's dying. Love with the person who read the poem for me this morning. Love with the people at breakfast. It was just wonderful to feel the connection, the space that was directly possible because a certain way of thinking had stopped. There was a pause, there was space, there was openness, there was a willingness to put aside so much of the static that we have, that we carry with us. And just here. So here we are. And I apologize for speaking so much, because I didn't really want to speak about something. I wanted to be here with you this way, but I didn't have to do it without saying some words. So this is how it was today. So I hope that it inspires you. I hope it challenges you to consider stopping in the middle of your thoughts and opening the wings of your mind, wings of your attention wide, into a vast space. Let yourself be carried and lifted and opened to the possibilities of meeting yourself, the person you're with, the world around you, in a way that is profoundly peaceful and loving as well. It's a beautiful life we can live, but to really feel the beauty and the great value of it, it does require a willingness and ability to, in some degree, pause in the middle of your thoughts. Because the thoughts, chances are that this possibility that I'm trying to point to today is not going to be found by thinking your way into it. But you've got to stop in the middle of your tracks. May you stop in the middle of your thoughts and find what's on the other side of your thoughts, just beyond them. So, thank you all.